This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Thursday, 9th of September, 2021, and we're seeing a deepening sense of unease, or at least a bit more defensiveness in equities, going a bit global as we had a bit weaker session in Asia than we've been accustomed to in recent sessions. Still, you know, we haven't really done much damage here in terms of where this correction is headed. It feels a bit more serious than maybe it actually is because we've seen so much persistent upside. But looking at next steps, next levels, slide two, the S&P 500, arguably that 21-day moving average is where the price action gets a bit testy. If we get below that, that's currently around 44.78 if you're on the September future or the Saxo CFD for the S&P 500. And we will continue to note two things. A, we have still a momentum divergence set up as if this correction deepens. And B, that pattern, very compelling, last 4 months where we've seen these big corrections and we see the upside suddenly picking up momentum, likely linked to the derivatives market and these S&P, these options on the S&P 500. And that action gets critical around the third Friday of the month, which in this case would be next Friday, September 17th. So just be aware of that at some point if we start to see this action picking up to the downside. And, you know, let's be honest, there are reasons to be a bit fearful here. We have concerns around fiscal stimulus drying up, the questions over the stimulus, questions over Delta variant, et cetera. What's your take on this market here, Peter?
So we had technology stocks and the broader market down yesterday, and yields were also down. I think there is concerns over growth. Some of the leading economists in the world and some of the biggest sell side investment banks have also cut their growth forecast. I think the growth forecast on the margin are quite minimal. I'm still hanging my head on the fact that China is not slowing down as dramatically as you could have expected. And on slide two, we also have the theme baskets, as you can see here. It was bubble stocks, crypto, 3D printing, and cannabis that were leading the declines yesterday. Not a big surprise, given those are the most growth sensitive theme baskets. Slide three. The PPI for China hit 9.5% year-over-year. 9% was expected. So we're still seeing issues with inflation. Inflation is currently at 3% in Europe, very close to that level we had back in 2010-11 when Trichet, former ECB president back then, did a massive policy mistake. Just for record,
all time in the history of my career, anyway. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry. Yeah,
that was pretty stunning. Yeah, and then we also have had news overnight that we have nickel prices hitting a 7-year high. We have natural gas prices in New York hitting a 7-year high. We have natural gas prices in Europe on a tear, and you have a home builder like PulteGroup yesterday saying they have a hard time finding building materials. And I heard on the radio this morning some of the municipalities here in Denmark, they are really concerned about whether they have to postpone infrastructure projects because in many cases prices on new infrastructure projects or building kindergartens, etc., is up 30-50% from last year when budgets were negotiated. So if you believe in transitory inflation, I think you have good reasons for that. And I think there are definitely elements that are transitory, but I also think that we are with this fiscal dominance era and green transformation and still urbanization going on in Asia and the super cycle and commodities. We have had investments being totally staffed off the mining industry. I really do think there are new effects on the horizon that could really drive a higher inflation rate over the next year than what we have been used to for quite a while.
Yeah, key points there. And as we look at what one of the approximate triggers might have been for more market volatility in recent sessions, we were looking at this U.S. 10-year rate in that 1.38% yield level. Well, yesterday, Altsia, we had an auction in the U.S. that sort of showed that the demand for these treasuries is still very strong. So we're not getting risk off related to higher yields. We're getting simply lower yields, as a reflection of risk off. I don't know, that whole trigger level now is sort of receded suddenly. What's your take on this treasury auction and what it says about the U.S. treasury market?
Well, John, yesterday we have seen, yes, an exceptional auction. It wasn't as good as the one of August, but if we remove the one of August, we could see that indirect bidders were the highest since November 2018, and also once that we remove the highs of August, also the bid to cover was the highest since June 2020. Basically, the striking thing about this auction is that it stopped through by 1.4 basis point. It means basically that the highest accepted bid was lower than the yield at when issued. And this is the fifth time in a row that that happens, and is the longest streak in modern history where that happened. So definitely sentiment in US treasuries continue to be bullish. And my take on that is just that the bond market believes that the Federal Reserve will need to delay tapering at this point. But if we have a dovish taper today from the ECB, that would put the Fed behind the curve. So definitely it's a little bit of a difficult situation. I still remain bearish US treasuries, but there might be some short-term rally here still.
Yeah, and then there's also the whole debate around the debt ceiling and the timing of that, which I guess could delay that bearish action once the issuance picks up, because that could be quite late this year. The timing certainly will be key for any trader in that market. What is your take on the ECB here? I mean, we have, it does feel like, and I'll include myself in this sort of consensus, that it's sort of moved towards expecting a bit of hawkishness. And I wonder if we've sort of overdone it a bit here. I think you're staying on a more dovish expectations stance. Is that right?
Yes, John. So I think that the market is correct to believe that there is going to be some sort of tapering under the PEP program, but that will be just a signal that highlight the fact that the program needs to end by the end of March. But still, the ECB is looking to increase purchases under the APP program or to actually initiate another program in order to continue to support the economy. And also, we cannot forget that maturities under the PEP program are going to be reinvested until the end of 2023. So definitely, I think that the ECB will not anticipate a hawkish move before the Federal Reserve. Definitely, the Federal Reserve will be the one that will lead interest rate hikes, definitely. But the ECB today can give a sort of dovish taper, which can, it can spark some short-term volatility in European government bonds. But I think that it poses a bigger threat to US treasuries, because it puts the Federal Reserve behind the curve. And basically what will happen is that the Federal Reserve, when it starts to taper, will need to be more aggressive in doing that.
Yeah, we've seen also that a couple of Fed officials talking about the need for a rapid taper. So let's see where the Eurodollar is. It's receded from that 119 plus area that is the sort of pivot high back from tail end of July, beginning of August there. You can see it on slide 7. And we're seeing once again sort of mean reversion in these FX trends. So you see the dollar back to neutral. It's picked up a lot of momentum off of the lows it's seen. And yeah, we're just waiting for the next signal here. We're not getting it just yet in Eurodollar, and it's a real disappointment to see it this far back lower. I would argue if post ECB close of today we're embedded back below 118, the bulls are going to have to give up on their stance for now, and we're stuck in this range bound limbo, possibly looking to test those lows once again. And I skipped a slide there, and that was slide 6. I just want to just highlight the story, something worth tracking, because we have the situation finally coming to a head here with the EU's face off with Poland over its rule of law and its stance on the judiciary. There's a couple of cases before the European Court of Justice, and this is getting to the point where it is having implications, because a commission studying the issue is basically saying we're at the end of the road. Poland needs to reform its ways, or it's going to be cut off from up to €36 billion in the EU recovery fund. That's not a chump change for a country the size of Poland. Interesting to see there's no reaction in the market. If you see Euro Poland, the Euro Zloty chart on the right, where you've seen a bit of a dip recently because of finally seeing a bit of central bank stirring on the eventual need to hike rates, even though they did not do so yesterday. They're looking towards a November review to make sure that they have all of their ducks lined up for both higher inflation, a strong economy, and rising wages before they go ahead and pull the trigger, despite the minus 500 basis points of real interest rates at the moment because of a 5+% CPI combined with a 0.1% policy rate. Just, I think, bears tracking this issue and the showdown there, risk of populist response or not from the Polish side politically. It's a very interesting issue. And then similarly, of course, Poland's neighbor to the south, Hungary, and their issues with the press and otherwise there. And now that's one of the interesting stories this week. This kind, to what degree, I don't know, they're related, but of course, that was given some of the credit. This disruption in Bitcoin, a disruptive move lower in Bitcoin this week, as we saw El Salvador moving to have Bitcoin as an official currency of the country. The timing could not be worse because we have a sudden correction lower, way below 50,000, which seemed to be the upside resistance in Bitcoin. Most other cryptos moving in sympathy. There's a notable exception. I won't get into that. But there's actually, this has implications elsewhere for El Salvadoran bonds. Quite interesting, I'll tell you, that you pull this story up on slide 8.
John, it's definitely interesting because it's a monetary experiment. But the point here is that El Salvador doesn't have a local currency. They have adopted the US dollar. So basically, all the stress and volatility concerning Bitcoin will be reflected by bond prices. And that increases the cost of funding of the country. Despite they've adopted also Bitcoin, to go forwards, they would need to access debt through the bond market. And if cost of funding rises, is going to increase the default possibility of probability of the country. In slide 8, I put two graphs. The graph on the left shows the bond price, cash price of the 2025 bullet bonds. And you can see that it fell to 83. So basically, what it's saying is that the bond is already in stress territory. If it falls below 80, we are entering in distress territory. At that level, the yield that El Salvador bond pays, it's around 11%. And then on the right, you see the yield curve 4 months ago, which was a normal kind of a steepening yield curve, and the yield curve today, which is obviously inverted. So it shows that the risk of a default has increased in the short term for the country. And my guess is that the more volatile Bitcoin is, the more we will see distress in these bonds.
Yeah, it's a very interesting story and very interesting to see how that shapes up politically, because massive risks for that leadership of that country over this issue. Let's get back to the equity market. We have, despite the rather across-the-board sell-off, we had one quite positive story, Peter, and that was Lululemon.
Yeah, Lululemon. We talked about it yesterday on the podcast. We were discussing how much of the tailwind from the pandemic would have tapered off, and well, very, very, very impressive results from Lululemon. They beat on the top line and bottom line. You can see their earnings per shares were up 125% year-over-year. Revenue growth 60%. They have a pretty impressive free cash flow generation, $200 million on a just below $1.5 billion revenue for the quarter. So this is really bolstering investors here. Shares were up 14% in extended trading, and yeah, as you can see in the share price, it's in a phenomenal growth journey this company is on, and they have really managed to branch out of the yoga pants that everyone was laughing and talking about that 5 or 6 years ago, when people like to ridicule the company. But it just shows you with equity investing that things are dynamic. You don't invest in what's here and now, you invest in what's the future. And so we always have to be careful about judging and ridiculing companies, because they can change. And that's what Lululemon have done. I'm very impressed by the result.
And that's no such thing as negative PR. Certainly the name got thrown around a lot. Everybody knew what that company was called after that incident.
Yeah.
And now take us through this C-Limited. What is this company? Tell us more about that and why it's up. What is this? 15X since 2019.
Yeah, C-Limited is a very fascinating company. It's one of its biggest backers is Tencent, which is investing its knowledge and vast amount of capital into this company, which started as a gaming company, then branched into e-commerce and have been able to create this e-commerce ecosystem called Shopee. It's very addictive in the sense that people, when they become first-time buyers, they have an incredible take-up curve in terms of recurring buying on the platform, and they in only a few years they have become the biggest e-commerce platform across Indonesia, a lot of the Southeast Asia companies, Singapore, etc. They have huge success in South America as well. But as you can see on the financials here on slide 10, they've never made a positive, you know, positive profit, or never made a profit, sorry. They do so in the gaming business, but that gaming business is substituting a lot of what's going on in the e-commerce. They are cash flow positive, but in terms of accounting earnings, they're negative, and that's because of their very rich option program to the management team. It's a very popular stock for no reason. It's a momentum stock. It has done really well, but they're raising $6.3 billion in the biggest equity financing deal this year. I looked at the share price performance. It didn't really take a hit yesterday from this announcement. So it seems like investors and are buying into the growth story. And we talked about Poland earlier in the podcast, and Poland happens to be the first country that that C-Limited is now moving into in terms of its e-commerce business. And I'm super excited about this, because that I think will be one of the first tests of Shopee going against the Amazon in a what I would call a more closer to a core market of Amazon. So I'm very excited about this.
Okay, interesting stuff. And speaking of Tencent, you noted the connections there. Just yet another announcement we're seeing overnight: the Chinese authorities telling Tencent to stop their focus on making a profit off of younger users and getting them addicted. Apparently, as I saw a headline in some other article, that China doesn't like the way that Generation Z is spending its time in China, concerned about their so-called moral fiber, and to asking to tone down portrayals of gender in their games and violence, etc. So just a really interesting, very, very interesting policy push, unlike anything we've seen anywhere else, how that plays out. But makes, of course, huge risks for Tencent in terms of growth. And we've talked about that before. What else do we have on the docket this week for earnings? I see Oracle is up on Friday. That's one of the bigger companies yet to report.
Yeah, well, just quickly, I when you said that with the Tencent, I saw the headline as well. It really reminds you about the big ideological clash that was back in, was it the 80s, when Milton Friedman basically saying there was only one objective of a publicly listed company, and that was to adhere to the shareholders and not this, which was his thing about, you know, stakeholders. But I think the Chinese government, with its mandate to Tencent and other technology companies, is taking this debate to a totally new level. but coming back to the earnings, there's only one this today that is important, and that's Zscaler, which is a fast-growing cloud-based cybersecurity company. It's doing remarkably well. The same goes for its share price. I think it's up 10x in 4 years. So that's the only one to really follow. I know that a lot of growth-oriented retail investors are talking about Zscaler. It is pricey. You pay a lot these days for growth, but it's definitely something that we will have a look at. Also, because cybersecurity is one of our favorite themes to be betting on for the future as a long-term investor.
Yeah, that's quite a combination, both cloud and cybersecurity. If they could only add a bit of ESG and green in there, they might
and AI.
And AI, then they might go another 10x. all kidding aside, let's look at the calendar for today. ECB meeting up, of course. And as we noted, we're wondering whether the sort of expectations have gotten a little bit ahead of themselves or not. So we're going to find out either way whether the euro has sort of any ability to move independently or just sort of trade passively against the against the dollar and the yen. Latest weekly claims data out of the U.S., some interesting energy market energy data out of the U.S., the latest oil stock reports and natural gas storage weekly. That natural gas issue is a very pressing one. The storage needs to build going into the winter. You could have some crazy pricing there if there's not enough gas in the system and we get a cooler than the normal winter in the U.S. And then we have a T-bond auction a 30-year today, a little bit less anticipation around that, I suppose, after yesterday's very strong 10-year auction and bits and pieces up tomorrow, including that Russian rate decision where they're expected to hike another 50 basis points. I didn't mention the beige book, by the way, but also confirming that some of the inflationary inputs that Peter's talking about, lots of reports of price pressures and having to hike wages to attract workers. And as well, that July JOLTS survey out yesterday showing yet another new record in the number of openings. So very interesting to see how, as these benefits roll off in this month, they have rolled off essentially at the beginning of this month, whether any of those people are out filling some of these positions that are open or whether there's a mismatch in skills, et cetera. So we'll see how that data rolls in coming weeks. For now, that's it for today. We'll be back to see where things stand with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.